I'm Sean Thomas, and this is Inland Visions, a show where we meet extraordinary people and travel to amazing places so that we can all understand each other just a little bit more. And today, we're in Rozohutor. This is an impressive ski resort, just 40 minutes from the sun and sea of Sochi. But as beautiful as all this is, there is a looming danger that people just don't fully realize. Avalanches. And we're here to meet the team that keeps them in check. About the secrets of this fascinating job, we're going to speak to Sergei Bendeliani, who's part of Rozohutor's avalanche control team. Sergei, thanks for meeting us out here to talk us through all this. I guess I'll start off by saying nature is completely unpredictable, but they say that you have an amazing ability to negotiate with the snow. Talk to me about this, and how do you know what to do?
Well, I think it would be a bit too bold to claim we can actually negotiate with snow. Unfortunately, our communication with nature is only unidirectional. We can listen to it, but we can't impose our terms on it. All we can do is try and decipher the clues left by nature, the snow, and the weather in our location.
Now, as I understand it, there's a lot of moving parts. It's much more complicated than people realize. It's not just one person or a couple people. It's an entire group of people working together to make this happen. Can you talk me through this process?
It's all about teamwork. We have meteorologists who monitor the conditions and prepare forecasts for the next 2 or 3 days, people who observe the snow, and those who maintain the equipment we can use to trigger avalanches, if necessary. This work is 24/7, at least while we have snow on the slopes. It's a continuous cycle. We have about 40 people on our team during the winter period.
Thanks for meeting us out here. It's a beautiful day. I have to ask, predicting the weather is difficult to do accurately under regular conditions. How do you do it out here in the mountains under these conditions?
The geographical position, the landscape, and the proximity of the Black Sea create very specific conditions for this region. We now see behind us the Greater Caucasus Range, which holds back the air masses coming to us from the west. And accordingly, we witness a very large amount of precipitation here. You can see the snow pole, there's already 2.5 meters here. The year before, we had 4 meters. And so this region is characterized by a very large accumulation of snow. And in fact, it is quite difficult to predict the weather in such conditions.
Since we're talking about avalanches, I have to ask, when is the most dangerous time for an avalanche to occur? Is it immediately after a snowfall or when the weather's nice and clear like this?
Yes, a heavy snowfall does cause problems for our avalanche control service. We can literally see 70 to 80 centimeters of snow in a few hours. Very often we get a meter of snowfall overnight. And of course, the resort is never fully open in such conditions because the avalanche danger increases dramatically. But even clear weather can be dangerous. For example, when we have a long period of warm weather, the snow becomes wet, which increases the load of the snowpack and decreases its stability. In general, you need experience and certain specific approach to assess the avalanche situation. But in general, yes, the more intense the snowfall, the higher and more serious the avalanche danger becomes.
And since you're the meteorologist, I have to say thank you for such beautiful weather today. We couldn't do it without your help. Thank you very much.
No problem. Yes, thank you. Thank you.
So how do you actually measure the level of dangerousness of a particular slope? How do you look at it and say, that's dangerous, we can't go there?
We've been studying this area for a long time and know the zones that carry a certain threat level for avalanches. So every year, we kind of know what to expect from each zone, what avalanche conditions they've met, and so on. And we take measures accordingly. Something like that.
Now, as I understand it, you get down to an actual microscopic level, looking at the snow, the type of snow, the different types of snow crystals. How does that actually help you assess the danger level? I mean, is it really that specific?
The most reliable information on avalanche dangers comes from direct observation. It's what we touch with our hands or walk on with our feet or see inside a test pit. We always dig snow pits, measure the different temperatures inside the snow mass, study the layers formed after a series of snowfalls, and do a number of tests to determine the stability of those layers. We then try to extrapolate information obtained in one location onto other zones, because it's not always possible to dig test pits. Some locations can be dangerous, so we only dig in safe places.
The steepness of the slope, winds, the temperature, humidity, this all has a factor in whether there's danger of an avalanche. What's the most important factors, or do they all work together?
You could say that any factor could prove to be decisive on any given day. Typically, the most important factors are the amount of snow and the steepness of the slope. But there are days when the most avalanche-prone places are okay, while you get an avalanche somewhere you never expected, or, shall we say, in places that are not typical.
Now, Sergey, you said that something along the lines of a mistake with an avalanche worker should never happen. In fact, when it comes to your work, a mistake is life or death. Is that not a lot of pressure? Is your job dangerous?
Overall, it is. We're responsible for the safety of our guests, and a mistake by an avalanche worker can be much more than that, especially when there are multiple mistakes. If a worker gets caught in an avalanche or there's an incident, usually it's down to a series of mistakes. Risk management is key, as it allows us to assess situations according to their danger level and come up with an appropriate way to handle them. If a professional finds himself in danger, that means he's made a number of mistakes. That's why I say it's wrong when professionals get into such situations.
Have you ever been in a situation where you see a dangerous area, but you can't reach it, you can't do anything about it? What do you do then? How do you handle that situation?
It happens all the time. The easiest thing you can do is restrict access to that area. Mountains are challenging terrain, and it's not always possible to get to a place you want to reach in order to take a better look, or to bring explosives, or some other action. If that's the case, we just close off the area and keep away.
All right, let's go see what else we can find in the mountains. Absolutely beautiful up here. A little bit scary, but beautiful. So let's say that you find an area that an avalanche is likely and you need to release that energy. How do you go about doing that?
Most of these areas were identified a long time ago, and they have stationary systems installed which allow us to trigger avalanches there remotely. Talking about areas that don't have such stationary systems, what we do is, after we set off an avalanche, we send a patrol there to see what snow cover still remains. They identify spots where further action may be needed, and then we take it.
Now, here at Rosa Hotel, you guys have some of the best state-of-the-art equipment for combating avalanches. What do you have?
It's primarily a gas system running on a mixture of propane and oxygen. This is the shed that holds the equipment, and it's linked to detonators planted in spots where avalanches originate. The system is controlled remotely from a safe distance. It can be operated even at night, so we can choose the exact moment we need down to the second. That makes this system different from other traditional tools, such as explosives or artillery, which can only be used in good weather with great visibility. Our system works in any conditions at any time of day. The other thing we rely on that complements this system is explosives. We use the binary type. They're helpful in places that the gas-powered system can't reach or where it's proved less effective for some reason. We've gone through a number of different systems, and they all have their strengths and can be helpful in some situations, but we've settled on these two for the time being as our go-to solutions. I mean, gas systems and explosives.
Now, I'm sure that no avalanche is the same. How do you know what methods and techniques to use against this avalanche as opposed to that avalanche, per se?
We install stationary systems where possible, and our choice there is obvious. If we have a gas avalanche control system in a certain spot, that's what we use. They protect most of our slopes. If we don't have it, our course of action will depend on the level of danger and on how necessary avalanche mitigation is. It may well be the case that it's not worth it. We may be able to just close off an area for a while, which is also part of our job and one of the most effective avalanche control techniques. So we close off some areas, set off explosives in others, but most of the work is done by our stationary systems.
Now, a lot of your work is done at night. How is it possible for you to control something as big as an avalanche in complete darkness?
That's a hard question to answer. We don't really control avalanches. During a snowfall, our meteorologists take measurements every hour, so we know exactly how much the snow cover has grown. We know which way the wind is blowing, and we can make assumptions about certain areas that should have enough snow for our mitigation activities to be effective. It helps that we can do that remotely. Also, we have snow grooming equipment operating at night when it's safe. The truck drivers provide us with valuable information about any slides that have occurred and their size. That helps us a lot in our work because the data we get from people on the ground is the most effective tool for ensuring safety.
We know that you do an excellent job here at Rosenhütte in controlling avalanches, but we know that there are people, we'll call them free riders, if you will, that go off-piste, who specifically go to places where the slopes are not groomed. How often do they cause avalanches, and how do you deal with them?
Yes, that does happen quite often. Skiing off-piste by default means that you're on an avalanche-prone slope. Here at our resort, we monitor the slopes, trigger avalanches, restrict access to certain areas, and can take other steps. We don't have the same level of control outside designated skiing areas. After every snowfall, free riders rush to those slopes like maniacs. They often neglect safety rules and overestimate their abilities or strength. They crave adrenaline and excitement to a degree where it interferes with self-preservation. Yes, they do get caught in avalanches. Thankfully, these are mostly small slides that aren't that dangerous and can't do much damage. There are many avalanches like that which mainly go unnoticed because nothing major happens. A rider gets into one, digs himself out, and moves on. What's worse is that sometimes people, without realizing it, trigger avalanches that can affect others. That's hard to control. All we can do is keep reminding people who go off-piste that they're responsible not just for their own safety, but also for the safety of others. Before going there, they should make sure they've taken all the safety precautions.
The most spectacular descents with the most breathtaking views. It's amazing to watch, but what's going on in the heads of the off-piste skiers and snowboarders when they're racing down the mountain? Alexei Sobolev is a professional snowboarder, slopestyle and big air prize winner. I'm sure he has some answers.
Hello.
Hello, Alexei. Hey, how you doing?
Good, nice to meet you.
You too. Whew. So, I've seen the videos of what you do. It's breathtaking, awe-inspiring, absolutely amazing. What is this for you? Is this a hobby? Is this a way of life? Talk to me about what is this for you.
Скажу одно.
I'll tell you one thing.
You're snowboarding, and as soon as you try to give it up, life becomes impossibly boring and stressful, and you realize you just can't go on without snowboarding. This is the first main fundamental moment. Of course, there are new emotions that you can't get anywhere else. For many people, it's the adrenaline that tickles your senses and gives you so much power. There are people who are addicted to adrenaline.
So take me through this a little bit. You're out there. Maybe each time it's different. You're going down the course. What's going through your mind? What kind of, you mentioned new emotions, but like what's actually going through your mind when you're actually out there on the course?
This depends on weather conditions above all. It also depends on the terrain. There are some pretty safe slopes where you can relax and just let yourself go, enjoy the ride and not worry about anything. And there are slopes where you have to stay absolutely focused 100% of the time, even 150% of the time, assess the risks and not make any rash moves, because any slight error might send you off a cliff or provoke an avalanche.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned some of the dangers there. Let's talk a little bit more about that. You have to admit it is really dangerous what you do when you go to these extremes, and you could be causing danger for other people. Have you caused an avalanche yourself, or have you been in an avalanche? What's that like?
Right. Well, I'd say, regardless of how many years' experience skiing or snowboarding you have, or how much of a pro you are, it would be ideal never to get caught in an avalanche and never have to save anyone from an avalanche. It would be perfect for the avalanche equipment to never be used, ever. But situations do occur. This season, I got caught in a small avalanche. I activated my airbag. The avalanche rolled on down while I managed to steer away. So it all ended up just fine. But if there were some unprepared people in my place, a child or a teenager, or just a person who's not very tall, they might have been pulled into the avalanche, and there's no telling how it could have ended for them.
Now, I've heard it been said that you can tell a free rider from a regular skier because they always have a backpack with them, they always have equipment with them. What is the one thing that you always have with you that you need to have when you're out there on your own?
Well, I say the most essential thing is the transceiver, because even if you don't have a shovel, a probe or an avalanche backpack with an airbag, a working transceiver might still help the rescue team find you. If they get there on time, you stand a chance. If you get caught in an avalanche and buried under the snow and you don't have a transceiver, there's no way anyone can locate you. There's a really tiny chance of success, only if perhaps there's a large rescue team and the avalanche is small. Even if you have just 8 inches of snow covering you, no one will hear you, even if you shout at the top of your voice. Snow muffles all sound. At the same time, when buried inside the snow, you'll hear absolutely everything happening on top. You will hear people walking right over you and talking to each other while they won't hear a sound, even if you keep shouting for help.
Now, it's safe to say that the people who build ski courses and on-piste activities, they would like for you to stay on-piste, but that's not going to happen. You are a free rider by trade. Is there any way to make your job safer or what you do safer in the future?
You need to have a lot of training. I mean professional avalanche training, in order to understand how it all works, how weather conditions affect the snow in terms of increasing or decreasing the chance of an avalanche. You have to keep upgrading your knowledge and skills, and it goes not only for free ride guides, but also for free riders who do it for fun. Another thing you can do is ride in different places in different snow conditions and hit the slopes with experienced riders who will help you learn more about how to stay safe.
Rescue workers here at Rosa Hotor have to be prepared for all situations, which means looking for bodies. And if they hear this sound, that means it's the right place to look. Let's find out more. Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking the time to meet me out here. You have an incredibly important job. Do you know how many lives you've saved?
You know, the indicator of quality work for our service is not the number of people rescued from avalanches, but the number of people not caught in them. So thank God, we don't have to search for people and rescue them from avalanches.
So an avalanche happens so quickly, it's hard to remember what to do if you actually get into one. I guess the best way to survive an avalanche is to not get in one in the first place.
Yes, it's best to stay out of an avalanche. That's how you stay alive. If you're swept away by an avalanche, the only thing left to do is grab the strap of the airbag backpack and close your mouth to create a kind of chamber in which you can breathe. The bigger the chamber, the better the chances of survival, and the longer the time frame.
So, if an avalanche happens, how do you know if someone is actually a victim, if someone is actually caught under the avalanche, especially if it happens off-piste?
First, we need to take eyewitness statements, if there are any. Next, the first rescuers on the scene conduct a sensor search. If there's a person with sensors in the avalanche, it's very important. Please leave your transceivers on always. Then there is a device called RECO. It not only reads the reflector itself, but it can also read phone chips. And if all these devices fail to help us, then we stand in a line and start probing through the avalanche.
If an avalanche happens and I'm caught in one, what do I need to do? You've touched on this a little bit already in order to survive. And maybe what do I need to not do?
The most important thing is to try to stay calm. At that point, you've done everything you can. Then your only hope is your friends, the people you're with. The vast majority of victims can't even move their fingers because the avalanche heats up the snow as it moves and solidifies when it stops. The snow turns into concrete, so there's nothing you can do. Just work with your head, with your thoughts, and hope that your friends will help. What not to do? Panic. Conserve your breath so as not to waste precious oxygen. Basically, that's all.
Now, I've seen you have different equipment that you can use to help find people in an avalanche. From your experience, what's the best equipment that people can have? The shovel, this pole that they have, the beeper. From your experience, what works best?
All these devices and airbag backpacks have come a long way in the last 20 years. So an anti-avalanche airpack definitely increases your ability to stay on the surface. Also, the transceiver. It's extremely foolish to go off-piste without it. A probe, a shovel in your backpack, and trusted friends. That is, don't go off-piste with people you don't know. They might not know how to assemble the shovel, let alone find you under all that snow with a transceiver.
You do an excellent job in informing people what to do, what not to do, but if someone gets caught in an avalanche, they can't move, they can't be heard from under the snow. What are their chances of survival, and for how long can they actually stay down there?
80% of people caught in an avalanche who are dug out in the first 10 minutes survive, and 40% in the first 15 minutes. So you get a sense of how the chances drop. But of course, there are known cases where people have been in an avalanche for several hours and have been dug out and lived to tell the tale. But that's a rare case. Those are the lucky ones.
Now, I've heard that different countries have different rates of survival depending on the type of snow that is there. What type of snow do you have here in Rosa Hutor, and what are your chances of survival of an avalanche here?
In 90% of the cases, we can talk about surface avalanches. That is, snow that has just fallen and not bonded with the old snow, so it falls. That is what we're talking about most of the time. I mean, there are exceptional years like this one, where we have to deal with avalanches that are much deeper, on a massive scale. But it's unusual. So to summarize, if you have mountains and you have snow, you have a potential avalanche danger. You have to be prepared for that. You have to understand that.
Stas, thank you very much for taking the time. I've learned a lot, and I know a little bit more what to look out for. Thank you. So how much time does someone have to spend in the mountains here to become a professional in the avalanche business?
The general consensus is that it takes at least 5 years in one place for you to learn the ropes and begin to understand things. That makes you a beginner-level avalanche control specialist, and it takes a lot longer to become a good one. Ideally, you should be learning all the time. We have a guy called Uncle Lyosha in our group. He's been doing this for 30 years, and every year he learns something new, and he shares his knowledge with the younger generations.
We know that it's dangerous. In fact, we just heard the boom of your job happening right now. But is it your dream job? Do you love what you do?
For some, it's a dream job. Many people come to us believing that this is something romantic and beautiful. But actually, I don't think it's a dream job because there's a very heavy burden of responsibility. And if you take it seriously, it's quite hard, quite difficult. So I just consider the fact that I'm in this place as my destiny. Fate brought me to my job, and I've accepted it. But I wouldn't want my children to do this work.
Sergei, dream job or not, we really appreciate you doing what you do. Thank you very much for showing us around. Thanks. Appreciate it.